Welcome to the second edition of Dave Ramsey's Entree Leadership Podcast. This is the place to learn what Dave Ramsey and his team teach about leadership and business. On today's show, we'll discuss hiring and why you should take more time when bringing new people on your team. One of the things that leaders and owners have to understand is people matter, not just having a warm body in a seat somewhere. Then we'll hear a teaching from Dave that will be actually one of our Entree Leadership Master Series in Atlantis, where he's going to explain the methods for hiring and why getting the right people on your team from the start is crucial to team culture and success. Finally, we have a special interview with Tony Hsieh, who is the CEO of Zappos. Don't know if you know this, but Zappos is the number six best place to work in America. Number six. That is pretty darn impressive. Tony's also the author of the book Delivering Happiness, which is one of Zappos's core values. If you're going to work there, one of the things that you must do is deliver happiness. Who am I? My name is Chris Licurdo. I'm one of the VPs here at Dave Ramsey's organization. Have been for almost 11 years now. And I have the fantastic opportunity to be able to travel the country teaching businesses, owners, and leaders how to grow and build their business. I also teach a three-day version of Entree Leadership Master Series here in Nashville. Now, what can you expect from the podcast? Every single podcast, we are going to be bringing you tools to grow your business, to grow you in your leadership. But we also want you to be involved. We want you to interact with us. We don't want you to just listen to the podcast. We want to know what you're thinking. We also want to know if you have any questions. Are there any topics that you want to hear us discuss, explain, whatever? There's a couple of ways you can do that. The first of those is if you're on Twitter, you can follow us at Entree Leadership. That is at E-N-T-R-E Leadership. Send us your questions. Send us your comments. You can also do this through email. You can do it at podcast@entreeleadership.com. Once again, we want to hear from you. We don't want this to just be something that you're listening to. Get involved. Let us know what you're thinking. Now, today's lesson is a fantastic lesson for leaders. It's about hiring. It's what we call adding and subtracting, hiring and firing. And something you should know about our company is that for 5 years, we've been voted one of the best places in Nashville to work. In fact, one of those years, we were voted the best place in Nashville to work. Now, how do you get voted that? Simple. The Nashville Business Journal, every year, has a third-party company that will send out a confidential survey to your team members. Confidential, what I mean by that is nobody in leadership gets to see any of the answers. So they get this survey, and they're able to answer a bunch of questions that they have, as well as give any comments about this company. 5 years we've had them send out that survey. 5 years we've been voted one of the best places in Nashville to work. How does that happen? Well, you're about to find out. Sit back and listen to Dave Ramsey in Atlantis teaching on how to get the right people in your business.
Hiring and firing, adding and subtracting, team math. Proper hiring creates a good team, and a good team lowers turnover. That was Rick Perry, our HR director. I will tell you that if you have 50 team members or more, you need to start looking at an HR director. Because you start spending too much of your time doing your hires by yourself. And your key people are spending too much time of their hires doing hires by themselves. When you reach about 75 to 80 people in most businesses, you need to start considering, and or large dollar volume, you need to start considering a CFO. Those are two structural hires that as an entrepreneur, tactical hand-to-hand combat guy, I did not naturally gravitate to, and I waited too late on both of them. I was a year late hiring both of them. And when I brought the CFO in, it changed our whole company. When I brought the HR director in, it loosened up and changed our whole company because everybody was having to do all their own hiring and all their own firing, and it was driving us crazy. We still do all our own firing and leadership and all that. But the process of bringing people on and onboarding is so many steps in our deal now that we can't do it. Now, Rick gave me some numbers the other day. He said in 2007, we had a 15% turnover. In 8, we had a 10% turnover. In 9, we had a 4% turnover. This year we'll have about a 3% turnover, it looks like. Something like that. And that includes all of the, what I call non-turnover turnover. I split our HR turnover into two categories because we have a young crew, as I've told you 20 times. They're under 30. They're in flip-flops and T-shirts. They're brilliant, but it looks like a .com when you visit us, okay? And so they're forever getting pregnant and going home. I don't count that as a bad hire and a turnover, right? That's life phase. Or they get married and move off to, you know, Canada or something with their new husband or wife. I don't count that as a bad hire. That's not real turnover. That's life happened and they turn over. Real turnover is they quit for a better job or we had let them go. That's real turnover. That's the ones I want to prevent. You can't prevent the other, except trying to hire people who don't have a life, which really probably wouldn't be a plan. So, but we're looking to continually decrease our low turnover. We're doing more with the team we have. We have less costly replacement. This is absolutely fabulous. Rick says that the other position he was in, he was with Procter & Gamble, that in many of their divisions they would see 30 to 50% turnover annually. And we're running four. And four on a small number of people, 300 people. I mean, we don't lose people. We just don't lose them because there's not a better place to work. You understand? And we remind them of that all the time. Team members leave or are let go most often because they never should have been hired in the first place. Rick says we do have a 95% turnover before we hire them. Our goal is, and let me tell you, a resume doesn't count. I'm talking two interviews in, you still only have a 1 in 20 chance of landing a position with us. 95% of the time, you will not get on, even though you made it through two interviews. We're that hard on hiring. Why? Because I don't want you unless we know we want you. It's too costly. It kills everybody. Think about it. Take time when hiring. The number one, without a doubt, the number one mistake we've made and the number one mistake most of you make in hiring is you don't spend enough time hiring. You don't wear them out and wear them down and bring them back and bring them back again. You bring them in once, they're breathing, and you hire them on the mirror test. Fogged it up, they're in. And I know how that happens because it's how I did it. What happens is you're working, and you look up and there's a stack of stuff here and a stack of stuff here. And you're going, I need somebody to take care of these stacks. And I got to stop my work. So when I stop my work to start interviewing somebody, then the stacks get higher. And you're going, I don't have time. I got to get somebody hired. Get in here and help me. You're breathing? Come help me. And it's all based on frenetic frustration, overworked, underpaid, everything's stacking up. It's in a hurry. I haven't thought this through, and I got to get somebody in here. And then you get a gossipy, crazy, incompetent nut burger on your team. And you'd have been better off to have some stacks. Slow down. I'll tell you that in my personal experience of working with small business people and being one too, that in the early days that we needed to take four or five times as much time as we took. So whatever you're taking, how much time you're taking in your hire, multiply it by four or five and you'll be close. You have got to put more effort into the hiring because you've got to filter out the nut burgers. The boneheads will drive you out of the business. They will. You know what I'm talking about. And you go, if you get five or six of them in a company of 20, you just want to quit. They'll drive you in freaking sane, won't they? Is anybody with me on this? You do not want to do bad hires. Slow down. Take more time. And the only way to do that is do a better job of projecting when you're going to need them. You need to do a better job of looking and going, by December, we're going to need someone. It takes us 3 months with our program to do a hire, and so we're already late interviewing. By the way, this is October. You know, you don't wait till December and go, right? Which is what I did for years. I would just be working, and then I'd go, hey, come here and help me with this. And I thought everybody worked like I worked. Then I went, what's wrong with you? You are weird, you know? And then I'd be going, now I got to stop and do this again. And see, you know, hiring somebody slow, right, one time is actually quicker than hiring three people wrong. Because you don't have the drama and you don't have the problems and you don't have to do it over and over and over again because you shouldn't have hired them in the first place. Slow down. Our people will tell you that to come to work for us is a total pain in the butt. The interview process on how they get on board with us, they will tell you it's an adventure. It's like legendary. They all compare notes in the first 90 days. What'd you go through? You know, look at this bruise. I got hit. You know, it's like, you know, I mean, they're just like, it's unbelievable the stuff we put them through. Turnover is expensive and lost productivity because you have to stop what you're doing and go replace them. Plus, what they're doing is not getting done. And it costs you morale. Guess what? If people are leaving, people think that the people that are still there think there's something wrong. Look, 6 people just left this month. Oh, no. That's why I started dividing our turnover between real turnover and life turnover. Because we had enough turnover, and you had like 6 or 8 of my friends are leaving. There must be something wrong. Dave always talks about it being rare air. Maybe the air is not good. You know, and they start getting these ideas. It's like in real estate, we used to call it shop worn. Sometimes you put a house on the market and then it doesn't sell and it doesn't sell. And then it won't sell only because it hadn't sold. Because it's been on, you go, that house has been on the market for 7 years. There must be something wrong. It's haunted. You know, and people start, there's rumors about that house and there's nothing wrong with it. The only reason it hasn't sold is it hadn't sold. And sometimes the reason morale goes down is because there's turnover is just because people think there must be something wrong, and there's really nothing wrong. It's just that you had turnover. So we say, hey, look, you know, we lost 17 people this year. By the way, we lost 9 of them to babies, marriages, and moves. And so real turnover, we only had this many. And we review that with our team so they know. And they go, oh, yeah, well, I feel like a lot of people were leaving, but I remember now so-and-so. And they, you know, you help them calculate this, and so there's not a morale issue associated with turnover. But if the place is a freaking, you know, revolving door all the time, then everybody's, the one that stays thinks there's something wrong with them. Because I'm the only one still here. Maybe they all knew something I didn't. They kind of have this mystery thing going on. When posting a position, give enough information for candidates to rule you out without wasting your time. Have some fun with this. You know, we put smart aleck stuff in our ads. Like, if you can't spell initiative, don't apply. You know, this kind of stuff. And just because you're under 30 doesn't mean you know how to build a website. We really mean you do need to know Flash and you do need to know Cold Fusion, and we will know in 30 seconds into the phone call whether you know that or not. Don't call us if you don't know. I mean, we're just real smart aleck and in your face about this, you know. And you know, we need somebody with sales experience and Girl Scout cookies doesn't count. You know, that kind of stuff. Aww. that kind of stuff. So, I mean, you know, cookie dough maybe, but Girl Scouts, no. Yeah. So, when posting a position, give enough information for candidates to rule you out without wasting your time. By the way, that's how much you're going to pay. Don't have a position that pays $40,000 and spend a bunch of time interviewing some guy that wants $95,000. You're wasting their time and yours. You're going to frustrate them. You don't have what we in sales call a qualified appointment, do you? They're not going to buy. And if you talk a guy making $95,000 into taking your job at $45,000, he's not going to be happy long. And that happened not long ago. We had a guy that applied for a video editing position. We had posted it at $45,000, and he comes in. We didn't have it posted at $45,000. We had it posted, and he comes in wanting $95,000, and one of our guys got all enamored with him, who is not on a P&L, and came down and tried to convince us that we needed to adjust the budget and hire this guy. And we're like, we'll just take it out of your pay. What do you mean? I'm like, well, that's what you're wanting to do. You want to take it out of my pay. And I don't think that, you know, I don't think this position is a $95,000 position. Maybe this guy is, but this position's not. We're not at that level with this position. So, no, well, he says he'll take a pay cut. Yeah, right. And then he'll be unhappy in 6 months, and then we've got a problem. So here's the thing. No. And if you'd have posted it on there in the first place, we wouldn't even have been having this conversation. Now you've wasted a lot of people's time. And stupid. Fix the thing. Don't do that again. You know, so put the amount in there that you're willing to pay, and that, you know, you're not trying to gather resumes up. You're trying to hire the right person. I don't want a stack of resumes. I don't need kindling for the fireplace. I mean, we're going to get plenty of resumes anyway from people who are just trying to get in the door. When word the posting in such a way as to attract the personality and the character traits you want. We put stuff in there like, this is going to be very hard. No, we're kidding. It's dadgum near impossible. If you want to do this, you're really going to have to plan on sticking with it. If perseverance is not your middle name, don't even come in here. And that's the kind of stuff we'll put in an ad on our website. Now, we do employment ads. They don't work. We post them on our website, and we do referrals, which is by far the best source of we pay bounties of our people. Our number one hiring connectivity is through an existing team member. And we pay them $250 if they bring one of their friends that comes to work for us and fill a position. And if they're a web programmer, we'll pay them $1,000. Because I have 17 web programming positions right now to fill, and I can't find these turkeys to get them in the building. We're importing them from all over. It's amazing. So at various levels, too. But anyway, so $250. But then you have to clarify. You have to tell your friend. You have to tell your people working for you. Okay, people, is this a good place to work? They'll go, yes. Have we created a great environment? Yes. Are we breathing rare air? Yes. Then don't, for $250, bring your crazy friends. Only bring your good ones. Because we all have crazy friends. Don't bring the crazy ones. We don't want them, and you don't want them if you think about it. So don't get confused about the $250 thing, because you won't get the $250 unless they make it through their 90-day probation. And during the 90 days, if not during the interview, we will discover they're crazy. And then the next time you interview, you want to bring somebody in for an interview that we know, we're going to have to think about it because you've lost credibility on your ability to refer. So, but you know what happens is that people go, this is the best place to work. Who do they tell? They tell all their friends. And guess what? If you've got good people, you know who they hang out with? Good people. Yeah, it's very strange. And so we really do get the majority of our hires that way, or off of our web posting, you know, our employment section on our website. And just word of mouth in the community. You know, everybody wants to work there because they've heard everything about us. So the entree leader is looking for a team member with a combination of opportunistic motivation and philosophical motivation. Now, that's what you're looking for, and you kind of need to define those character those words in your situation. I'll help you with mine as an example, okay? In our place, the opportunistic motivation is we're looking for people to join our team who realize that joining our team is a huge business and income opportunity. We're a great place to work, and if you get on board this train has officially left the station. You could go on a ride with us, and it's going to be fun. Pew, right? This is our trajectory. Get on board. Be a part of something bigger than who you are. You may make more money than you've ever made in your life. You may get to do things you've never done in your life. And you may get to live some of your business dreams out in this. That's the opportunity, right? And we want people that are fired up about that. Then there's the philosophical motivation, which is what your company is all about. What we often around our place call the why. Why are we here? What do we do? Why we're here is we sell hope. We sell life transformation. And the philosophical motivation for us is we're Christians. And so from that perspective, that worldview, that's how we do things. Now, what's weird is what we've found is that if someone comes to work for us for just one or just the other, they don't make it. If they come just because the business thing is awesome and Dino's dad passes away and I shut the whole company down and we pray for Dino for an hour, they don't understand that. That freaks them out. They don't understand that we take an hour off to do a devotional once a week. They don't get that stuff. It freaks them out. Because that's not efficiency, that's not business, and you know, you're not politically correct. And I get into all this kind of crap with these people because they're all about money. They're only about opportunity. And they're money only motivated. Nothing wrong with being money motivated, but money only motivated scares the crud out of me. Or, on the other hand, if they're philosophically motivated, it's a Christian company. I've always wanted to work for a Christian company. That's code for I don't like to work hard. That's what that is, okay? And then they're all freaked out that we work our butts off. And that we demand excellence, and that we demand you show up on time, and that we get right up in your stuff if you have some stuff. It just freaks them out. Never sell a J-O-B. Always have that opportunity available. We call it work that matters. We do work that matters. I pray every Monday morning when we close up our staff meeting, Lord, thank you for work that matters. We are doing something here that matters. Lives are touched. People are changed. Marriages are saved because of what we're going to do this week. Thank you for work that matters. You want to get involved in that, or you want to collect a paycheck? Well, you want to collect a paycheck while you're involved in that's what you want to do. But if you're just looking for a J-O-B, you're just looking for a place to park your hat and get health insurance, get out of my office. We got stuff to do here. This matters. This is bigger than just money. And you got to get plugged into that. Set short initial interviews that are no longer than 30 minutes. This is your drive-by. It's a drive-by interview. 30 minutes. Not 32 minutes, not 31 minutes. No more than 30 minutes with your first interview. Why? You're not going to hire them anyway. on that first interview. And they're not going to make a decision if they're the kind of people you want on one interview anyway. All we're doing here is just trying to call. We're trying to rule out and trying to get down to 5 or 10 people that we can take to 2 interviews or 3 interviews or 4 interviews. We're just quick. Now, let me tell you this. It's so weird. It's a paradox to me that on the radio, I can get you in 2 minutes in front of 5 million people to say things to me that you should have never said anywhere. That is amazing to me. And I cannot do a 30-minute interview successfully. I am horrible. My team absolutely years ago, even before we had an HR director, said, you can never do interviews again. You're awful. Because I spend 2.5 hours telling you how great we are and never even find out anything about you. And then find out, you know, halfway through the thing that you're a devil worshiper or something. You know, get out of my office. It's crazy. Why am I doing this? So you can't do that. So 30 minutes. And Rick Perry, our HR director's up there a while ago, the guy's a genius. He can learn stuff about you in 30 minutes, and it's not trick interview questions. It's just being human being to human being sitting and listening. He says, 30-minute interview, here's your ratio. 2 ears, 1 mouth. 20 minutes of them talking, 10 minutes of you talking. And end the interview. 20, 10. You can explain a little bit to them about what this is and what's going on. Here's a copy of the KRA. Here's how we're going to do the comp plan. Here's a little bit about the company. Tell me about you. Tell me about you. No, really, tell me about you. And they will tell you stuff they should never tell you. It's amazing. And you can just go boom, 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 and you can stack up then some good ones, and you can go, ooh, that one was crazy. I got creepy stuff running down my spine. Get out of my office. You'll have it happen. You know what I'm talking about. But quick drive-by interview. And you can do a whole bunch of those, or you can have somebody do a whole bunch of those. HR does our 30-minute drive-bys. And once you get past that, then you'll talk to a VP who's actually going to do the hire. But HR does our 30-minute drive-bys, and you got to get through the basic stuff that we're looking for, you know, and that way we're not wasting a VP's time and you don't have the basic tool in your belt to do that position or whatever. By the way, back to that work that matters thing for just a second. You don't have to be doing something like we're doing for it to be work that matters. If you're in the plumbing business and my water heater's out, you do work that matters. Believe me, I need a shower ever so often. If it's cold in the winter and my heat and air is out and you're in the heating and air business, you're doing work that matters. Now, some of you build houses, but some of you build homes. Some of you sell houses, but some of you sell homes. It's work that matters. My business is going to go out of business if I'm in retail and I don't have a quality sign on the front of it, because I'm dependent on you. My people get to eat because of your sign. That's work that matters. And if you can't tie that in that way and start to think about your business that way, get out of it. Get out of it and go do something that matters. I'll tell you this. Truett Cathy is a buddy of mine. Dan Cathy, his son, runs Chick-fil-A today. They are convinced that chicken is work that matters. They really are. Eat more chicken, right? David Green's a buddy of mine, worth several $1 billion. Started a little thing in his garage in 1972 with $600. Today it's called Hobby Lobby with 12,000 employees. He's convinced that people having the items to conduct themselves in a hobby that is a distraction rather than television is work that matters. And so are his people, by the way. So you just got to decide that working together in our economy, serving someone, doing what you do, is work that matters.
That, folks, is one of the best lessons you can ever learn if you're trying to grow your business. Why? Because you have to have the right team members on your team, period. Yes, you want talent. But on top of that, you want to make sure that you've got somebody who absolutely loves what you do, absolutely loves what the position is. That is a must. Only then can they be successful. Now for us, we've got an extensive hiring process. In fact, Harvard has a 7% acceptance rate. Of all of those people that apply to Harvard, they only take 7% of the applicants. For us, we actually have a 0.5% acceptance rate. Why? Because we are absolutely going to do everything we can to make sure that we get the right team members on the bus. I know I've used this for every single time I've hired. Every time I've hired, I've had a very long process with these people. In fact, one of my guys, Aaron West, who I brought on to be the AV coordinator. Now, this is one of the most crucial roles in the whole building. This is a guy who's got the opportunity every single time to embarrass Dave, embarrass myself, any of the other speakers in front of thousands of people on stage. This is definitely the role that I wanted to make sure I had the right guy. And it took me 5 months to find that person. Not only was he talented, but this is a guy that when we talked about this position, he lit up. He was on fire. That is the way that you've got to hire. You've got to make sure that you're spending the time. If you had time to do it right the second time, you sure had time to do it right the first time. All right, next up, we have a great interview with Tony Hsieh, CEO of Zappos and author of the number one New York Times best-selling book, Delivering Happiness. Now, some of Tony's highlights. In 1999, Tony sold Link Exchange, the company he co-founded, to Microsoft for, get ready, $265 million. He then joined Zappos as an advisor and investor and eventually became CEO. In 2009, Zappos was listed as one of the Fortune magazine's top 25 companies to work for, and later on that year was acquired by Amazon for a deal that valued over $1.2 billion. $1.2 billion. In his book, Tony explains how an emphasis on corporate culture can lead to unprecedented success. So make sure you're listening to this, because this is some fantastic stuff. Helping out with the interview is one of our newest team members, John Acuff. He's the founder of the popular blog Stuff Christians Like, and recently released his third book, Quitter, Closing the Gap Between Your Day Job and Your Dream Job, which, by the way, is already a Wall Street Journal bestseller. John is a part of the speakers group with me, and we are so excited he is part of the team. Now, I'll turn it over to John and Tony.
When somebody starts a business, nobody says, I just want to keep the world the same. You know, I want to stay average. I want things to be exactly the way they are. We all have some part of us that says, I'm going to start something big and true that changes things. But along the way, as we get bigger, bureaucracy enters, process enters, and sometimes we take steps away from our original purpose. How have you kept the team motivated on the original purpose of Zappos?
Well, I think it's definitely evolved over time, and we definitely did not have all the answers in the beginning and learned a lot through trial and error. But I think one of the best things we did at Zappos was roll out our core values as a company. And we actually didn't always have core values because that was one of those things that a lot of us, myself personally, kind of resisted in the early days of Zappos because it felt like one of those big corporate things to do. And I think the reason we felt that way is because a lot of big corporations especially have these things called core values or guiding principles or so on. But the problem is usually they're very lofty sounding. They kind of read like a press release the PR department put out, and maybe it's something you learn on day one of orientation, but then it just becomes this meaningless plaque on the lobby wall. And so for us, we wanted to come up with committable values, and by committable meaning we're willing to hire or fire people based on them completely independent of their actual job performance. And when you use that criteria, it's actually a really hard list to come up with, and it took us a year to come up with it, and this was 5 or 6 years into the company. And it also wasn't one of those things where a bunch of senior executives went to an offsite for a long weekend somewhere and came up with a list. But I actually just sent an email out to the entire company and asked everyone, what should our values be? And we went back and forth for about a year and then eventually came up with our list of 10 core values. So if you do a Google search for Zappos core values, you can see what those values are. And I think once you actually structure your hiring and firing and performance reviews and so on around those values, then what we found is that everyone starts adopting it not only as part of their everyday language, but also as the default way of thinking. And And for us, that's been pretty powerful, and also scales as the company gets bigger.
I love to hear that it was 5 to 6 years into the process, because I think one of the things that hangs up small businesses or entrepreneurs sometimes is the perception that it has to be perfect from the get-go. And I've always said that for me as a writer or somebody who writes a blog, 80% perfect and published always changes 100% more lives than 100% perfect and stuck in my head. And so can you talk to that that experience, the learning process of trying to figure things out over a 5 or 6 year period, and kind of how that contributed to your ability to really say, okay, here's what we've learned, here's what we've figured out are our core values?
Yeah, and well, so from the beginning, culture had always been really important for the company, because at the previous company I co-founded, the company culture had gone completely downhill, and it wasn't a fun place to work at anymore. So I definitely didn't want to make that same mistake again with Zappos. And what we found was in the early days, it was relatively easy to hire people that we thought would be good for the culture, But the problem was, as we grew, you know, I couldn't personally interview everyone anymore. And every company always makes, I don't think there's a company that exists that has never made a bad hire. And so we've definitely made a lot of hiring mistakes. And what helped us through the process of figuring out our values was actually just going through, you know, reflecting back on the history of the company and thinking about, okay, who would we want to clone if we could, and who was a bad hire? And then that leads to thinking about, okay, what values are represented in the people that we want to clone, and what values are missing from the people that were bad hires or that we had to fire? And and that definitely helps through the process. But you kind of have to, it's kind of hard to just come up with values from a out of thin air. It definitely, the experience, good and bad, helps come up with those values. And another thing that we actually teach now as part of, I don't know if you're aware or not, but we actually have a separate entity and website called Zappos Insights. And there's ZapposInsights.com. And one of the two-day seminars that we host for other companies is about helping them figure out their own values. And part of that process is actually figuring out people's personal values, which I'd never done before. But it's actually a pretty interesting exercise.
That's great. And I love the idea that your core values aren't theoretical. They're real life and they're put into practice. As you identify those people you mentioned you wanted to clone, how did you reward them? How did you keep them engaged? That's one of the topics we're going to be talking about on the podcast, is how do you recognize your star performers? How do you continue to build the culture that initially brought them in and grow them?
I mean, the two most important things for a company overall, and this has actually been backed by research from books like Good to Great or Tribal Leadership, which are great books. One ingredient is going the whole values thing, making sure that your corporate values match their own personal values. Because if there's a disconnect, then it's really hard for it to work out. And later discovered was in the research is that companies that have a vision that has a higher purpose beyond just money or profits or being number one in a market actually end up outperforming their peers in the long run. And so really this sense of having a higher purpose in the company is something that is important for all employees. And I guess really it comes down to a lot of consultants or books talk about how to motivate employees. And there's different techniques that work up to a certain extent. You can motivate them through recognition, or you can motivate them through incentives. But what we found is that there's a huge difference between motivation and inspiration. And if you can inspire your employees through a vision that has a higher purpose, that has meaning to them, that's not about money or profits or being number one in market. And if you can inspire your employees by having corporate core values, and not just stated values, but actually practice values that match their own personal values, then you can accomplish so much more, and you don't really need to worry about the motivation part of it. And the other thing I would say is making sure that I think everyone in the world really wants to continue to grow both personally and professionally, no matter what they're doing. So just making sure that there's always opportunities for that, for not just your star performance, but for everyone.
And I think we all want to be part of something that's bigger than ourselves and have that experience. And you see sometimes where brands try that and it doesn't work. I remember when Nike did the Bodie Miller campaign and it was had religious overtones and talked about be a Buddhist and this is, you know, you can be part of something bigger than this. And it was during the Olympics where he just didn't have a good year and you could see people react and go, this isn't a bigger purpose for me. This is just a sports campaign, and it felt disconnected. What is some advice you'd give to a small business that would say to you, we've got a lot of employees, and their attitude is, my job is just a job. My life exists outside these four walls.
I guess there's it's really hard to speak generally, but usually that's either because the company isn't actually acting on a higher purpose, and a lot of companies will say one thing, and then when it actually comes down to a tough decision between that and maximizing profits in the short term, a lot of companies will just choose the profit maximization route. And so then what the company is saying just doesn't really become believable. And in a lot of cases, it could be that it could just be the wrong employee, and that's why we focus so much on the hiring part of it, because if you actually get the hiring right, then a lot of the other headaches, you'll just save yourself a lot of headaches. And for us, we actually do two sets of interviews. The hiring manager and his or her team will interview for the standard stuff like fit within the team, relevant experience, technical ability, and so on. But then our HR department does a separate set of interviews purely for culture fit and for looking to see if their personal values match our values, and they have to pass both in order to be hired. So we've actually passed on a lot of really smart, talented people that we know can make an immediate impact on our top or bottom line, but if they're not values match for us, if they're not good for our culture, then we won't hire them.
Because of the cultural cost you'd inflict by hiring them.
Right, and it's, you know, there's a cost to it in the short term in terms of top or bottom line, but we're really trying to build a company for the long term.
Well, one of the things that I really liked in Delivering Happiness is how full of stories it is from employees, and I know that's something you've put a priority on. And when I talk to friends about Zappos, they don't tell me that they like it. They tell me they love it, and then they tell me their Zappos story. My wife, for instance, I've told her a ton of different people will be interviewing, and Tony was the only one she wanted to say, please tell him I love what they do. Please give him a hug for me if that's possible. So how important is the idea of a story and kind of that cultural piece to what you guys do?
It's definitely important. I mean, ultimately, we think of ourselves as being in the stories and memories business. And so we're always thinking about how do we create stories for that customers want to tell their friends and family. You know, we don't. Our whole philosophy is let's build our brand around customer service and then let our customers do the marketing for us through word of mouth. So because of that, we, even though we're very referral-based, we don't have a referral program. We don't have a loyalty program like airlines might, because we don't want customers to buy from us or be quote unquote loyal to us because to get that extra point. We want them to be loyal to us because they want to and they want to tell their friends about their experiences. So internally, we have this. We use the word wow a lot, and we use it as a verb, and we think about how do we wow our customers. How do we? And it's really not any one single thing. It's really more, I think, just a philosophy or mentality when we're interacting with customers. And so there isn't one specific formula that we apply to all customers. It's really, you know, what do you feel is the right thing to do that's really going to help build our brand to be about the very best customer service and customer experience and is also in line with our core values.
Well, one of the things that I notice as we talk about your core values and your company is that it almost feels like Zappos employees, you're pouring so much into them that they're pouring overflow out to all the customers. That to me is where it feels genuine. It doesn't feel like you have a plan to take care of customers in a really good way and then a different plan to take care of employees. It feels like there's a purpose that transcends kind of the walls we sometimes put between a customer and an employee. How are you continuously feeding into your employees to make sure that they're in turn feeding into customers?
Well, With the vision being just about delivering happiness, whether it's to customers or employees, and we try to apply that same philosophy to our vendor partners as well, it's just an, I guess, when it's simplified like that, it's just an easy vision for everyone to understand and remember and practice on a daily basis. Just, are we making each other happy? Are we developing personal, emotional connections with each other and with our customers? And at the end of the day, have we contributed a little bit to making the world a happier place?
Well, that's a great approach, and I know that I've personally benefited. I know there's lots of other people that love Zappos that feel the same way. So just one last question, and I'm sure it's one you're certainly not at all tired of hearing about. It starts with a capital A. When you guys were bought by Amazon, that became one of the most popular articles for Inc. magazine and really swept the web as far as a topic of discussion. Why do you think that purchase? Because companies are purchased all the time. Why has that one resonated with so many people as a topic they want to discuss and kind of figure out?
I think part of the reason is because it's actually very different from most acquisitions that have been done in corporate America and even Amazon. And most of their acquisitions, the plan is to integrate the company being acquired into the parent company, and then over time, the original company kind of loses its identity and joins the mothership. Whereas for us, as a precondition for even considering doing the deal, we told them the only conditions under which we would do it would be if we could remain independent and continue to grow the Zappos brand, culture, and our way of doing business our way. And now it's been more than a year since the acquisition happened, and happy to report that they've remained totally true to their word. From our point of view, it's basically as if we swapped out our board of directors with a new one. So instead of flying to San Francisco once a quarter for a board meeting, we fly to Seattle once a quarter and for a two-hour meeting. And that's when you come to take a tour of our offices here in Las Vegas, you'll see there's no sign of Amazon around. And so I think that was part of the reason, was that this was very different from most of their acquisitions. And in fact, there's been a lot of times already where we've made the complete opposite decision from what Amazon has made. And, and part of that is because of our focus on company culture. And we just found out this morning we actually made the Fortune 100 Best Companies to Work For list.
Congratulations.
Thanks. Yeah, no, we're super excited because it's the third year in a row, and this year we actually we debuted at number 23, and then last year we were at 15, and this morning we found out we were at number 6, so we're pretty excited about that.
Yeah, that's awesome. That is awesome. And your book is Delivering Happiness, A Path to Profits, Passion, and Purpose, and you tweet at Zappos, right?
Correct.
Okay, and ZapposInsights.com is a place where people that enjoyed this podcast or want to know more about the Zappos way, the Zappos values, can certainly go there and interact in that way. Is there anything else that you'd like to say of places people can connect with what you do and how you do it?
Yeah, definitely. There's actually a lot of different options. But we have blogs that kind of give you an insight into our culture, and that's just at blogs.zappos.com. We're located in Las Vegas and actually give tours to the public Mondays through Thursdays, and it's a lot of fun. We'll pick you up in a Zappos shuttle from the airport or the hotel. Tour takes about an hour and then drop you off afterwards. And to sign up for a tour, you can just go to the website tours.zappos.com. And then one other thing, actually, that I think your listeners might be interested in is we have this thing we put out once a year called a culture book. And we basically ask, every year I send an email and ask our employees to write a few paragraphs about what the Zappos culture means to them. And except for typos, it's unedited. It includes the good and the bad, and it's organized by department, so you can see how the warehouse culture might be slightly different from the accounting culture. And for anyone that wants to get a free copy of that, you can just email CEO@Zappos.com. And it's a physical book, so just make sure to include your physical mailing address, and we're happy to send that out. And I think that's about it. And then there's separately the book Delivering Happiness, which you can find on Amazon and other bookstores.
One, the thing I love about the culture book and about Delivering Happiness is that you are who you are. You don't get the sense that this is, you've got a Tony the CEO role or a Tony the, you know, head of Zappos role. You're just Tony. And so even from the forward, you talk about, I didn't use a ghostwriter. You know, here's some grammar things. And, you know, here's our culture, good and bad. We're going to be transparent with it. We're going to be honest about it. And I think so many people react to Zappos in such a positive way because we're so unused to experiencing honesty in business. And I think that's a sad thing, but it's a great thing to see you guys be so successful at doing that, and hopefully that encourages other companies.
Yeah, well, part of it is, you know, there's so many people in corporate America where they're a different person at home on weekends versus at home in the office in the office on Mondays at work, and they end up leaving a little part of themselves, or in a lot of cases, a big part of themselves at home. And for us, what we found works really well for us is rather than focus on work-life separation, we really focus on work-life integration. You're just the same person, whether you're in the office or outside the office, hanging out with other employees. And for us, the lines are very blurry. And most people, when they leave the office, leave to go hang out with other Zappos employees. And for us, what we found is when people feel comfortable truly being themselves, that's when their creativity shines, and you know, their true personalities can come out, and that's when they're happiest and most productive.
And it's exhausting to maintain different versions of yourself, a work version, a home version, a marriage version. It's awesome that you guys look at it from a holistic standpoint. I'm sure that we'll have other chances to learn about that and delivering happiness and all the other different ways you mentioned today. So thank you so much for joining us, Tony. I know you're incredibly busy. Congratulations on the best place to work again, number 6. That's awesome, and I appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me.
Bye, Tony.
Bye.
That was John Acuff interviewing Tony Hsieh. And let me say, I absolutely love that interview. That is some good information. You have to realize where that's coming from. That's not just coming from your brother-in-law. That's not just coming from your buddy who's got a landscaping company. That is coming from one of the top CEOs of our country. And what is one of the biggest things he discussed in there? You have to have core values. It's a must. Way too many businesses that I meet with have no core values whatsoever. At least they don't have them written down. And when I talk to them and I ask them what they are, they can't come up with them. You have to have core values. You have to have something that you can point at every single time and say, this is the way we do this. What I love about that interview and what I love about what Zappos does is it absolutely ties into what we teach at Entree Leadership. Having core values changes your business. Here, some of our core values, one of them is we have a no-gossip policy. If you gossip, we will warn you once, but pretty much after that, we're going to fire you. Why? Because gossip is a cancer. You can't have it in your business. And I know you're sitting there right now listening to me going, yep, got some of that, or yep, work somewhere where had it, and it absolutely stinks. Another thing is, another one of our core values, you have to have fun when you work here. We are going to expect that you come on and work really, really hard. That's a high expectation of ours. But on top of that, you have to have fun. Are you going to have some bad days? Of course you're going to have some bad days. But the most important thing is that you're leaving this place going, I cannot wait to get back in the morning. I look forward to it. When you set up a culture that has core values like that, it absolutely changes the pool of people you get to hire from. Think about this for a second. When people hear that you're voted number 6 best place to work in America, or when people hear, wow, Ramsey's Place voted one of the best places to work in Nashville, period, it changes the pool of who you get to hire from, because champions want to work in a place like that. Well, folks, I hope you've enjoyed today's podcast. Again, our goal is to give you information to change your life and change your business. Remember that you can follow us on Twitter at Entree Leadership. That is at ENTRE Leadership. Or you can send us your emails at podcast@entreeleadership.com. Again, be a part of this. We want to hear from you. Also, head over to the business section of DaveRamsey.com and sign up for our monthly newsletter. It's free. It's got great information on it. A bunch of stuff that's also going to help you to change your business and change the way that you lead your team. And if you want more teaching from Dave right away, plan to attend one of our Entree Leadership events. You can check out EntreeLeadership.com for more information. Well, that about wraps it up. This has been fun. Again, my name is Chris Licurdo. I hope you got some great information out of this. Thank yous go out to Chris Mefford, our producer, Zach Bennett, the studio maestro, Colin Fatke and Bobby Robertson, our show editors, Becky Tennell, who we just call our ambassador of awesomeness, John Acuff, Tony Shea, and of course, Dave Ramsey. Folks, have a fantastic day and look for the next Entree Leadership Podcast.